I'd like to welcome you to the Passion of Real Life Legends. And again, my name is Janet Atwood, and I'm the cover editor for Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, excuse me, and author of The Passion Test, Discovering Your Personal Secrets to Living a Life on Fire. We're so grateful that each one of you is with us tonight. You have unique gifts which no one else can give, and by joining us on these calls, you join us in learning how each of us can share our gifts, live passionate lives, and make the world a better place in the process. We've come to discover, and we hope you have as well, that when each of us gives our unique gifts, follows our passions, and uses our talents, all of us benefit. And as long as any of us is not doing that, the fulfillment we are all able to enjoy is less than it could be. Tonight, I am honored and privileged to introduce you to one of my greatest teachers and mentors, Byron Katie. In my experience, Katie is one of the most enlightened beings in the world today, and I know hearing this, she would say something like, "Honey, I don't know anything about that. I just know the difference between what hurts and what doesn't." And that's what she teaches people all over the world, how to undo the thoughts, concepts, and beliefs which hurt through the simple yet powerful process of investigation she calls the work. Learning this process changed my life dramatically for the better, as it has for people around the world, and I'm thrilled that all of you will get to experience this process tonight. Katie was a businesswoman and mother living in a small town in the high desert of California when her life went through a dramatic transformation from depression and unhappiness verging on suicide to the embodiment of love she is today. I hope she'll share some of this with all of you tonight. Since 1986, she has shared the work with hundreds of thousands of people in more than 30 countries. Katie is the author of the best-selling book, Loving What Is, and has recently released a new book titled, I Need Your Love, Is That True? Time magazine called Katie a spiritual innovator for the new millennium, and Tony Robbins said Katie's work is a powerful process of discovery, a key that unlocks the heart. This evening, I'm also honored to introduce my co-host, David Ricklin. David is the founder of SelfGrowth.com, one of the most popular personal development websites on the Internet. David has prepared an e-book called The Top 100 Experts on Self-Improvement, and quite appropriately, one of the chapters in that book profiles Byron Katie.
Hi.
Before I turn the interview over to David, I want to mention that tonight's interview will be a little different than others we've done. After David asks Katie a few questions, Katie will take David through the work on an issue he feels strongly about related to the relief efforts for Hurricane Katrina. I urge you to stay on the line and listen to the process, whether you agree or disagree with Katie's feelings about what's going on. If you will, excuse me, whether you agree or disagree with David's feelings about what's going on. If you will stay open and listen to Katie as she takes David through the process, you will discover a new way of looking at the world which could change your life. David, thank you so much for being with us, and I want to thank you in advance for your willingness to deal with some difficult issues for the benefit of all of us. Now I'll turn it over to you. David, are you there?
I am here. Thank you, Janet.
You're so welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. Katie, are you here?
I am, David. Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the call. I want to welcome you and welcome everybody who's on the call to join us tonight. We're looking to get a lot of excellent information from Katie, and as Janet mentioned, also hear a lot of thoughts about what's going on with me. And we're going to go through a lot of specifics here with a lot of good information. And I'd like to start, Katie, by asking you a few questions.
Right.
The series that we're on right now is focused on passion and the part which passion has played in the lives of successful people like yourself. And those who know you would say it appears that your greatest passion is really knowing the truth in every moment. Can you tell us the story of how this passion really arose in you as you discovered this process of the self-investigation process that you call the work?
Well, you know, David, the passion, it seems, as I look back in hindsight, was always there. I was so depressed for more than a decade that I was unable to even brush my teeth. The simplest things, like even get out of bed. And I began to sleep on the floor because my self-esteem was so low. Now, that is passionate. I was passionately suicidal. I was passionate. And then one morning as I lay sleeping on the floor, actually a cockroach crawled over my foot, and I opened my eyes, and in place of all of that darkness was a joy that I can't describe. And then my passion, it's as though it just switched eventually. And fairly immediately, I began to help others see what I learned in that moment, and that is that when I believe my thoughts, I suffer. But when I question my thoughts, I don't suffer. And what I love about this, David, is that I've come to see that this is true for every human being.
Can you tell us some specifics? How is the work that you started developing at that moment? How has it changed your life?
Well, you know, what is so funny is those 40-odd years, I was 43 when I had the experience I just described on the floor. But up to that point, I was so good at giving people advice and pointing the finger, and no one listened to this advice. And then after that moment on the floor when I could see, you know, the cause of all my problems, I began to be very quiet when it came to advice giving. In fact, I stopped, and that has stopped for 18-plus years now. What stopped it, David, was I began to hear the advice in my head for other people, and I turned it around, which is part of this this process that I offer people, and I could see how ridiculous and how so often that advice was impossible, not only for them, but for me. I wasn't able to take my own advice. So that gave me my life's work, and that was to take my own advice wherever possible and when it made sense to me. And so I've been following my own mind, and it's very enriching to know what is possible and what is not possible for myself. And what's happened is I find remarkable. People from all over the world are now asking me for advice, and of course I still can't give it, because for each of us to discover for ourselves what's right for ourselves.
Well,
so I think that's how my life has really changed.
Well, what's interesting about that as I'm listening to you is I know I'm in the mode of always giving people advice.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I think most people are in the mode of it's easier to try to solve other people's problems than to figure out your own problems and to question yourself. And it looks, and from what I've read, and we'll get into in a little bit, the work in terms of the questioning, the self-investigation enables us to really turn a lot of that around.
Yes, and thank goodness there are people like you that do give sound advice. We all have our way, and it's all valuable. And my advice, I've come to see that as the parts that I can live are so powerful that the example that I live, I think that's very helpful for people. I know it's helpful for me.
Well, it's interesting. I just want to share one of the things with everybody in the line today about Katie. There's a lot of people in the self-help, self-improvement industry that talk about different ways to improve your life. Katie's somebody who walks the walk. From everything I know and I've heard about her, she's someone who lives what she teaches. And I think for everybody in the line, she sets a powerful example of what you can really do in terms of changing yourself.
You know, it certainly doesn't take courage to do that. I think it takes courage not to. So really what I found is it's so much easier to walk my mind out, you know, that right mind, to walk it out and live it out, because it gives us a whole internal life to follow, and then, you know, cause and effect that's what we deal with here.
And I want to jump into some of the specifics, and let's step back to your first book, Loving What Is. Janet mentioned that earlier. It was a bestseller, ton of great content, great methodology, and I want to get into some specifics. And Loving What is the concept of the book. And I want to reference what's been going on with Katrina in the Gulf Coast. Hundreds of thousands of people in the Gulf Coast have lost their lives, have been displaced from their homes. Will you help our listeners understand how anyone could love what is, love such a disaster with such devastating effects?
Well, you know, it's simple for me, you know, to finally now to, you know, I watch, I'm glued to my television and to the news and watching these people on the rooftops, and they've lost their loved ones, and they're in attics, and it's hot, and there's no food, there's no water, and there's so much pain and suffering. And I watch very closely as these people teach me how not to do that. These people teach me, it's like what is, and what is, you know, reality, it is what it is. and there's nothing we can do about it. What is always the story of a past. And what I love about the past is it's over. Now, how can it serve me from here, and how can I help? So that's, you know, that's what I love about the past. It is the teacher. And it's just a waste if I cannot see it with my eyes wide open to see that reality and let it serve me now. And so many of us leave it up to other people rather than to be a student of life, a student of the past, and use it so that all of that pain comes out for good.
Very powerful. I'm looking at it. I'm thinking about some of my feelings relative to what's going on there, and also relative to other things in the past. And for me, in a number of situations, it's always hard to let go of the anger, the frustration, things like that in the past. Are you going to be able to take us through some of the process in terms of how we could take the past from this emotional attachment to a point where we can learn from it?
Well,
is that part of the whole process?
Yeah, that is a part of the process. And the work, you know, these four questions and turnaround, it's experiential. So only, you know, it's up to each of us to walk ourselves through it and see how we come out emotionally and how our emotions change. I know that I can see and experience most horrendous things with people who come to me, you know, one-on-one to do the work, and being a mother and grandmother, the things that come at me. And I have come to see that even sadness itself is a minor tantrum. It's the war with what is. It's the war with reality. And again, reality is the past. What can I do in this moment now? And as I continued to question my mind, I continued to live in this free space and this moment as a collective intelligence that knows how to respond. Sadness, this emotional sadness, this war with reality, this war with what is, it costs us a lot of energy and power that we could be putting into change. And it also teaches fear in the world. And panic.
I definitely see that. Let me jump ahead to something that you've been known to say. One of the things that I've read in your book, I know you say, is judge your neighbor, write it down, ask four questions, and turn it around. Why do you encourage people to pass judgment on others?
Because I've talked about it a little, but we could say, for example, that my children... You know, I might think the thought, my son doesn't listen to me. And then the next thought is, how can he be so ungrateful? Or why can't he hear me? And the mind just goes crazy with that. But if I write that down and really look at that concept, my son doesn't listen to me, and I walk myself through that process and turn it around, then it leaves me, and this is the short version, it leaves me to listen to him, and it leaves me to listen to myself. And it leaves me, you know, very humble in the experience as I realize that I don't always listen to people at the level that I would like. Sometimes my mind is split. It's somewhere else, and I'm unable to. Maybe I'm spaced out. But until I really look at it, then I hold my child as though he were the enemy.
Okay.
As though he's doing something wrong. And I've come to see that people... I came to see very quickly that when people don't listen to me, it's because they don't need to.
Right. So the judge your neighbor, which was the first part, that's something that really provides a value when you turn it around.
And question it. Yes,
okay.
Because we come to see that everything is exactly the way it is supposed to be up to this moment. Now, do I have the power and the clarity and the love in my heart and the openness and the energy to benefit humanity from this place now? And that benefits me.
Right. Well, we've been mentioning the work a number of times. I just want to mention Katie's website for folks. I highly recommend checking out some of the things she's doing. It's www.thework, T-H-E-work, W-O-R-K, .com and to take a look at it after the call and to get additional details on some of the things that she's talking about. And right now we're going to move ahead to some more details of the work. And many of the people who are drawn to the work are struggling with what I describe as deep emotional pain from things like rape or incest, divorce, death of loved ones. And I understand that the best way for anyone to really appreciate the value of the work is to experience it. And as part of this interview, I was asked to prepare a worksheet. And a worksheet's really the starting point for stepping through the work. And I was asked to prepare a worksheet so you can take me through the process and allow our listeners to see how it works. And I sent you the worksheet I prepared. Can we go through that right now?
Yes, let's just do, David.
Okay, sounds good. Will you have it in front of you? And,
yes, and if you'd read it, then our listeners can catch up with some of the thoughts that millions of people are considering now. I've come to see that there are no new stressful thoughts. So if you think them, I have thought them, and the whole world has thought them, and they're very powerful. So if you would read your book.
Absolutely. Well, I'll start. You want me to just jump into my feelings or the questions, or just jump right into what I put down?
What you have written.
Okay. One of the things I mentioned it earlier here a couple of times, Katrina, one of the things that's going on with me right now is I've been glued to the television set as well, and I've been extremely angry with what's going on with President Bush, with the government, for their failure to really help the people in Louisiana in a timely manner. And I'm just outside New York City, and I saw what happened with 9/11. I've just been very upset with this, very, very angry, I guess, frustrated with Bush. And many of the people have died, I feel, because President Bush and FEMA, they've really failed to take proper action to ensure the safety of the people in the aftermath of the hurricane. And I just, as I'm watching it, as I watch television every day, it's on 24 hours. Every time I turn it on, it's on. I get angrier and angrier. And that's really, the starting point for one of the things right now that's kind of, just caught up in.
Okay, and I see that one of the things that you express is that you want President Bush to admit that he screwed up and that you want him to change things at FEMA.
Absolutely, yep.
Okay, so the work is so simple. It's four questions and a turnaround. So you want President Bush to admit that he screwed up.
Absolutely, yep. And FEMA, President Bush and the head of FEMA, both of them, absolutely.
Okay.
They screwed up.
Okay. So how do you react, David, when you think that thought and he does not admit it?
Frustrated that once again, someone who's supposed to be taking responsibility for our country and really taking the buck stops here, I'm a strong believer, isn't doing it.
So you become frustrated, and then your mind begins to be causes, and the pictures in your head begin to show all of the proof that you're right. That's the mind's job, and it will find all of the proof, and it'll be valid. And that's not right or wrong. It's just how the mind works. So does that thought bring peace or stress into your life as you watch, as you're glued to the television, and you think the thought, I want President Bush to admit that he screwed up, and he does not?
It brings more stress. It brings more stress. There's more mistakes, and it brings more stress to me.
So who would you be? This is the fourth question. Who would you be watching television, glued to the television set, without the thought, I want President Bush to admit that he screwed up?
Who would I be?
Watching these people. Just watching. Without the thought, President Bush. I want President Bush to admit that he screwed up.
I'd probably be, more sympathetic to helping and less angry about what the problems are and what the causes were. Who would I be? Probably someone more sympathetic.
Yeah, and it's nice to sit in these four questions. Every one of them, they're meditation. They are introspective. We become still and watch these answers as they surface from within us. And so, David, ask four questions. Turn it around. So I want President Bush to admit that he screwed up. So what is the opposite of that?
What's the opposite of
the opposite of I want President Bush to admit he screwed up is that I guess the opposite of him would be me, that I...
Try that. I want me to admit.
I want to admit that I'm trying to do the right things, that I'm doing the right things,
I want President Bush to admit that he screwed up, I turn that around. I want me to admit that I screwed up. And then I become silent again, and I look at my life. Where have I screwed up and not admitted it? And I sit in it, and I become very open and courageous with it. Where is it that I screwed up that I have not admitted? And as these things surface, I do it quickly. If I have to call someone that I haven't known and track them down for 30 years, I may call that person and admit it. I clean up my life. Where is it? Where is it that I've done it today? You know, where is it that I haven't admitted it? And I begin to clean up my own life because I don't have power over George Bush. But if it's such a noble thought, let me live it. If it's better for the world that he do that, why don't I drop make my little raindrop in there and begin from there? Because if I can't do it, how can I expect him to do it? I can't. And this is very humbling. So I like to see how far I get with that one. And oh my, what a journey. But you know, it begins with one, and that's very powerful for, you know, I was agoraphobic and paranoid, just radically so. And this has brought me out, and the power of one, and how that passes on and on and on. So I really want our listeners to get the power of this and how we can take it back when we don't have the power to shift a president's mind. So can you find another turnaround, George Bush? I want President Bush to admit that he screwed up.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm just kind of taking in what you're saying right now, that, you know, part of my anger is that I feel he hasn't taken responsibility. And as you've been talking, I've been thinking about, and I haven't before, I'm thinking about a number of areas where I haven't taken responsibility.
Oh, honey, isn't it true? Where is it that I don't take responsibility in my life? And here where you say, I want him to change things at FEMA. He has the talent to change things at FEMA. Is that true? I mean, can you absolutely know that it's true, even has the talent or imagination or capability or experience to change things at FEMA? And then when we think the thought, I want him to change things at FEMA, is that true when I consider these ideas?
Is it true? Yes. Does he have the talent? Can he, or the ability or the power? Do I know that for sure? No.
And not knowing it for sure, are you sure you want him to jump in there and try to change things at FEMA? You know, he has changed things at FEMA. And we see reality in front of our face when we look at the conditions after the storm. So how do you react when you want him to change things at FEMA and they're not changed? And he doesn't even admit what you want him to admit.
Well, kind of two things come to mind. One is still the frustration, the anger, but then I'm immediately, I guess, following through on what you're saying. Let's turn that around. Let me turn that around on me.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of things that I've tried to change.
Yes, and how frustrating that can be and how hopeless sometimes.
There are things that I've beaten my head against the wall trying to change.
Yeah, and we
that I've been unable
them
to
do what we can't accomplish ourselves in our own lives sometimes. And specifically, I want him to change things at FEMA. Turned around, I want me to change things at FEMA. Now, let me sit with that. Let me exercise all of my power. How can I change things at FEMA? Am I even making an attempt? Am I using my abilities to do that? Or is it that I have and have not volunteered? You know, where is it that I am some kind of an effect in that area? So I want him to change things at FEMA. Let's say, is that true? Yes. I want him to change things at FEMA. How do I react when I think that thought and things aren't changed? You know, I can become very frustrated, very confused, very hopeless, very unempowered, very stressed out. Who would I be without the thought? I want him to change things at FEMA. Much more peaceful. And in that, much more creative. Clearer.
Yep.
And around, I want you to change things at FEMA. You know, let me just be still and continue to watch the news and see where a space does open up, where I do have the capacity and maybe experience or enlightenment to make some kind of shift.
Each of the things that you're mentioning is kind of pushing me into, because my general mode is to, if things around me or people around me aren't behaving, doing the things I want, I'm in a mode of changing myself and also trying to change other people. But what you're saying and kind of forcing me to think about right now is, it's not healthy to be in the mode of trying to necessarily change other people.
Well, it's not for me simply because I've come to see that I can't. And then when they do change, I think, I did it. Well, how does that serve? You know, it just pumps me up again. Do I need it? No, I don't have time for it. I need the genuine. I need the genuine and the pure, because that's where we are the most creative. And the most helpful, and the most selfless, and that's weightless.
Okay, I can see the value in looking that way.
It's one way.
Let's step through. Can we take a
mm-hmm.
few minutes to kind of step through slowly what the process is? We talked earlier about, you know, judge your neighbor. Write it down, ask four questions, and then turn it around. Can we kind of step through what we're doing, what you're doing with me right now? Because I think it's powerful, and I want to make sure everybody's getting the four questions, the specifics of what we're doing, so they can walk away tonight and kind of start the process of taking a look at it for themselves.
Good. And you've written one here. I need him, President Bush. I need him to make my country safe. You need him to make the country safe. The first question is that true that you need him to make the country safe?
Is it true? Do I need...
I need
the government. I need him, and I kind of... The president, for me, represents...
The government. Good.
Making it safe. He represents... If you want to point to one person whose job it is, and one of the prime things that the government serves is to make my home, my country safe.
So is
it true? Do I need them to do that? Yes.
Okay. Now, the second question is, you need government to make your country safe. Can you absolutely know that it's true, that that is what you need?
Can you absolutely know that it's true?
That is what you need to be safe?
No. I can't absolutely know when it's true. No.
So the third
I believe it's true,
mm-hmm.
but can I absolutely know that that's the only way for me and my family to be safe? No.
So how do you react? This is the third question. How do you react when you think that thought, I need government to make my country safe, and you see that, and you're watching television, and you see Katrina and the aftermath?
Well, I think two thoughts. When I think that and things are going well, I think that's great. But when something's going wrong,
stressful thoughts.
But when there's a problem, an issue that is impacting me directly or people that I know or strongly impacting, then it creates stress, and already there's enough stress. It's adding additional stress when I see that. And then the stress of, you know, what can I do? What can I do to help? But first, why aren't you? I kind of think two things, and I do what I can. But I think, why aren't they doing what their job is?
Mm-hmm. And I have found there are only three kinds of business in all of the universe: mine, yours, and God's. And you know, I look whose business is the country. You know,
and this works with the three kinds of business. If I am mentally over there running the country, the government is running the country, there are two of us over there, and there's no one running my country right here in my mind and in my home with my family, my children, my grandchildren. So there's two of us, you know, there's a whole, I'm over there with the government, and there's no one here as I'm smiling at my grandchildren. There's no one conscious here. There's no one present. Because I'm in Louisiana, and there's no one here for me. There's no one here for my grandchildren. So what's happening to my government in my head and in my life right here, now? So, you know, and how effective is that? And, you know, just in the moment. So when I'm frustrated, I take it out on them. So, I need government to make my country safe. Who would I be without that thought? That's the fourth question.
Who would I be without that thought? I'd be someone, I guess, focusing. You mentioned mine, yours, and God's, focusing on my life.
Yes,
I'd be focusing more on my...
And my business right
my business.
Here, right now. You know, what is going on in my home, my government, and my mind? So I need him, I need government to make my country safe, turn it around. We've gone through four questions now, we're turning it around. This is where we get our power back. I need government to make my country safe, turned around.
I need me to make my family, my country safe.
Yes, I need me.
I need me to focus on it.
Yes.
Versus worrying about his job and his business, I need to really focus on my business.
Yes, it's like, what can I do for my country to make it safe? And what can I do for my children to make it safe? And what are my words as I'm watching television? What am I teaching my children as they listen, as I discuss it with my family through my frustration or my anger? What am I teaching them? That it's government's responsibility and not mine. It's not right or wrong. It's just to notice. And what is going on in my own mind when I am putting blame out there without doing equal time in my whole life? And that is to everything we see is our teacher, and it gives us the power to run a really clear and peaceful world from where we are. And that is not a small thing. That is not a little thing, because everyone around us takes it on. Just as though, you know, we're always teaching. It's just, what are we teaching? It's not an option that we're teachers. Every human being is a teacher. Just, what are we teaching? Let's be aware of it. And if I am fearful, I teach my children fear.
Fear. Makes sense.
And if I am empowered, I teach my children empowerment.
Let me. I want to talk about a couple of things that are coming through my mind right now. The first, I just want to share with everybody the first part of this, in terms of the worksheet that kind of started this process. And I think there's a lot of this on your website. A lot of the stuff you're talking about on the website as well.
Yes, the four questions and turnaround. It's always up front for everyone to experience.
Okay, so once again, for everybody on the line, www.thework.com. But I just want to share the first question that you had me answer was, who angers or saddens or disappoints you? And just to review, I guess the questions that you had me go through are, is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? And yet, then you were asking, how do you react when you think that thought? And the next step, who are you? Who would you be without that thought? Which I guess really helps me understand, you know, what impact that thought's having on me.
Oh my, it's the whole world, David. Mind, you know, it's no thought, no world. It's just, what kind of world are we living in? And the world is created through our imagination. And if we are experiencing a stressful life, I invite people to wake themselves up, because no one else can do it. so the beautiful thoughts, they don't need work. Like, I care about you. I'm so happy that we've connected today, and isn't this a wonderful world? Those thoughts don't need work, but the stressful thoughts, you know, just question them and turn them around, you know, for those listeners that may see that as valuable.
Right. I have a few questions on the process and what's going on. I also have some thoughts going on in my head. One of the general questions I have for you is the work, this process, this investigation process, I guess is one of the ways of looking at it. What makes it so effective for so many people?
Well, when we question what we believe, it's like you look down, there's a poisonous snake, and you're terrified. You're out in the desert, you're alone, and there's no one to hear you scream, and you jump back, and your heart is pounding, and you've broken out in a sweat, you're paralyzed with fear, and the clouds shift, the sun shines through a little differently. You happen to just get, oh my goodness, that was not a snake, it was a rope. So, you know, I invite people to stand over that rope for 1,000 years and try to make themselves afraid of it again. It's not possible, because you have realized for yourself what is true. This is self-realization. So I have come to see, David, that every problem is a rope. Without exception, it is a rope. But mind believes what it thinks, and its job as a seeker is to find all of the proof. And until it's questioned, it can never understand that it is the truth that sets us free. So we question what we believe using these four questions and turn around. It's so simple that children can do it. Everyone loves it. And in some ways, when we experience fear, we are immature. This is an immature human being, a fearful human being. We're like children. So I invite people to really work with this for a while and come to see that, you know, it can work with the snakes in their head.
Well, one of the things, as I'm going through this, and I also come back to how I almost have two sides of me. I have what I consider an intellectual side of me,
mm-hmm.
That kind of thinks through, and then the emotional side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find as I'm stepping through the process with you, it seems like a very mental process.
Well, there's nothing that's not mental.
Okay, I can see that.
It's not mental. But, you know, when we're sleeping, our body could be turning around and moving, and we don't experience it because there's no thought, you know, of no thought, no world. So what is not mental? Nothing.
Well, I compare it to, I guess, not only mental, because I guess the two words that come to mind, the intellectual side and the emotional side, for me. And as I'm stepping through the process, I see, it, for me, a lot of times things initially impact me intellectually. And I'm thinking through, I'm looking at the process, is it true? Can you actually know that it's true? And forcing me to really think who I am without that thought. And it kind of steps me through intellectually first, and then it brings me to almost an aha moment, which then begins to impact me emotionally. But for me, a lot of times, it's the intellect and then following the emotion.
Yeah, and that's what this work is about. It's about internal cause and effect. And we work with the thing that stresses us out, frustrates us. We question it, and we begin, as we question and turn it around, to experience the opposite, a place of balance, and also a place of gratitude that I didn't believe it was possible. Gratitude is something I thought I always thought that I should be experiencing, and I didn't. And now I live in that state.
Well, that's would be a great place for me to live in all the time. One of the challenges that I'm looking for me, and maybe you can open us up and provide some insight into this. One of the things that I see for me is I'm a small business that I'm running, and I'm very driven, and I have three young kids at home. I got a lot of stress-inducing stuff going on in my life, and I'm sure most people do today. And I find there are a lot of thoughts on a regular basis that come into my head that frustrate me or anger me. How does the work fit into, you know, on a day-to-day, literally on a day-to-day basis, things come up?
Well, the work is meditation. Isolate those thoughts and put them down. Just keep a pen and paper somewhere and write them down, and then just sit with these. Just sit with one a day as a meditation, and set yourself free and lighten yourself, wake yourself up. And like that, like the snake in the rope, once you're awake to it, you cannot be frustrated over that idea again. It's not possible, because you have realized for yourself what is true. And what I love about this, the work, is we're not left as peaceful people who drool on a mountainside. We're absolutely into action. And, you know, I see love as action, and where it's like love and action are where the mind and the body move as one without turmoil and opposition. And war is a fearless place, and it's the only safe place, really.
Powerful. You just mentioned, one of the things you started mentioning when I mentioned having multiple of these and this kind of stuff hitting me on a daily basis, write down your judgments. Write this stuff down. Why is it so important to write it down? Why can't I just sit and say, all right, this is...
Because the mind will justify it. It'll change the thought. It will play with it, manipulate it, and you won't even recognize it by the time the mind is through with it. So we write it down, and there it is, stopped. There our belief is, stopped. And we question it without changing it or manipulating it. And there's such a radical shift that begins to take place in it that we don't recognize ourselves. What this questioning of the mind does, it we really lose the world as we understand it to be. We come to understand that we're really living in heaven if we can see reality as reality and not see it through what we believe about it. Reality is not a problem. Our thoughts about reality, that is the terror, and it is the only hell in my experience, and I have known hell.
Well, from what you took us through before, in terms of the earlier part of your life, you clearly did.
My life is about... It is about getting these four questions and turn around to as many people as possible. Not that they would use it, but just that it's available as a choice. And so no one has to suffer like that. I was simply believing my thoughts. That was the only hell and depression I experienced.
Thoughts and beliefs. Well, let me ask you a general question about the work and does the work is going to fix a person's problems?
Well,
people have real problems.
What
is
yes,
it going to fix
do.
Them?
Yes, they do. When it's real, it's real. So will it fix people's problems? It restores us to a sane, clear mind. And a sane, clear mind moves through problems like a magician. It is not a problem for a clear, loving mind. Confusion is the only suffering in the world, and to question the mind is the end of suffering. It's the end of chaos.
So our thoughts and beliefs, if incorrect or inaccurate, are going to lead to confusion. And you're saying if you clarify them and gain a real understanding, it's going to bring you to clarity, which will enable you to kind of live now.
Absolutely.
and take real positive action.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What would a loving human being? They would take loving, caring action if they weren't so frustrated, exhausted, and confused, you know, too confused to do it or to even know what it is.
So your experience is that just really stepping through the process of asking these questions kind of makes people... Because I see a lot of times in my life where things can get overwhelming. And you're right, you're confused, clouded, it's hard to be focused. And you found by kind of picking one area, starting with that, and going through this process, you can gain clarity.
Absolutely.
A step at a time.
Absolutely. Just one concept at a time. Just to put it on paper, like my children don't listen to me. the world is a terrible place, you know, whatever all these thoughts were. We saw examples. And for people that want to begin to identify the stressful thoughts, the worksheet that you filled out is on the website, and they can download it. And I put this worksheet together to help to assist people pull their minds out on paper. And for it, a lot of us don't need it. We just simply, just anytime there's a stressful concept, we isolate it, put it on paper, and just continue to put them down all day long. You know, I used to drink a lot of water before I went to bed at night, simply so that would wake me. The need to go to the toilet would wake me, and to get these thoughts that are free without me manipulating them in any way, and write them all down, and then the next morning question them, because I could not get enough. I was ending the world, and I was in a hurry, because it was a world of suffering that I lived in, and I was undoing it, and I have undone it as far as I know, and I am totally open to pain. Absolutely, 100% open. Because, you know, I've come to see that an unquestioned thought is the only suffering. So who could fear a thought? But when we believe they're real, you know, it's because we haven't questioned them.
And it sounds like when there is reality, this helps clarify it and figure out what the real issues are.
Yes, and I call reality, you know, reality is a beautiful thing. It's like the short version would be woman sitting in chair talking to friend. Now, that's a reality I can deal with. And then I look out, you know, with the sun shining and the sound of ducks. And, you know, this is reality. But the story that we would superimpose upon reality, you know, that's not reality. That's imagination,
right.
Not wild. So if we isolate those thoughts and write them, it leaves us in the position to not only notice reality, but love what is right now in this moment.
I want to jump back to the snake rope example.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some cases, I think in most cases, I look back to my life and people that I know, in most of the cases, it is a rope and it's not a snake. And this process questions it and forces you to understand and appreciate that.
Well, if the person answers the four questions, yes.
Right. Now, in the case that the snake is a snake, it sounds like this process also forces you to focus on it to a point where you can gain clarity on what the objective, what you should do here and now.
Absolutely. Like if it is a snake, you know, why would I fear it? When I'm out of fear, I can be clear. And if the snake strikes, then I'm clear enough to move. You know, I'm as quick as the snake. And if the snake does bite, what are my thoughts about the bite? As I become paralyzed, not from fear, but from the venom, maybe. What are my thoughts? That's you know, who would I be without my story? Witnessing my own death. And that is life. Why would I miss my last few moments and live it in fear? Why wouldn't I be in contact with and appreciative of and love my last few moments? Not even knowing if they were not my last few moments, just loving what is. You know, if we're pushed off of a high rise, what are our thoughts on the way down?
You can think horror, or you can think what a great life you've had. I guess those
We're going to think what we think, because I've come to see, David, that I am being thought. I'm not even the thinker. I mean, it's not as though we have a choice over what we think. When you wake up in the morning, the I begins. I'm awake. I'm late for work. I've got a problem. I've got happiness. I've got this. I've got that. You know, it's the I awake. But, you know, who would we be without our story? You know, just witnessing life, just mind lived out as creation. It's so magnificent. And I invite people just to start with one stressful thought at a time. You know, what I love about this work is it meets us where we are from a fearful mind. We don't have to be spiritual to do this work. We just begin from where we are. And that's integrity. We don't have to fake it. We no longer have to fake it. You know, we can, in the privacy of our home, just sit and begin with the concepts that are stressing us out, that are costing us our peace, that are costing us our times, our joyous times with our family.
Oh. You mentioned a couple things that I want to just follow up on. One is the story.
Mm-hmm.
You said that a person's life is just their story. It's kind of their story about life. What do you mean? Can you get into a little bit more what do you mean by that?
Well, it's not just their story. Our stories are so important to us. You know, who would we be without our stories? You know, we have no idea. It's terrifying for the ego. What would I be without? So again, no thought, no world, and this is very frightening for people. But you know, I am the woman talking to you.
Right.
That's enough story for me. That's all I can handle. And what a wonderful position to be in. Or to say we were not talking. I am the woman sitting, looking out at the trees. What a wonderful, you know, and I can do that from a rooftop without my family as I saw them go underwater and not come up again as I float on the roof of what's left of my life. That's the power of a clear mind. And to see the people that I can help, because that's what helps me. And that seems like radical to some ears. And it's what we all deserve. Either that or God is a sadist. And I have come to see that that is not the case, that everything happens for good. And if I can't see it, then I'm experiencing the unenlightened mind, and that is hell. It's not right or wrong. I just am one that just pushes people to love, because I know that that's our path. I'm just in a hurry.
Well, I want to get a little bit into some of the other things that you do relative to the work and some of the things we're talking about here. You teach a 9-day course called The School for Work.
The School for the Work. It's amazing. It's an amazing place. It's like a place where people can take 9 days out of their lives and sit in the space with me and do nothing else but question the mind and come out as a kinder presence and a super problem solver, if you will. And it's my heart's desire, and I can't imagine anyone living their life without doing the school for the work first. And for those people that cannot take 9 days out of their lives, I have 2 and 3 days intensives where I sit with people. It's there like the mini school. And also the website where everything I have is offered freely and with directions, everything a person would need and to sit with alone at home. And, of course, the 2 books that are out and have done so well are available in bookstores everywhere.
Well, I want to talk about one of those. For me, my first introduction to what you did was the book Loving What Is.
Mm.
And one of the things that I found powerful for me about it, and I want to get some insight from you, is you take people through what looks like a simple process. It looks like a pretty straightforward process.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I saw that helped me a lot is you provide countless examples where you've taken other people through with their issues,
mm-hmm.
Using this questioning method. How do other people take advantage? What's the power of seeing how other people have gone through this? How does that help other people? And how can that help somebody?
Well, it's like if you see someone jump in the water that doesn't know how to swim, and you don't either, they jump in the water and they make it across to dry land. And because they did it, you believe you can do it, and you jump in, and you do it. But it's like being in the presence of truth, we find our own. So it's an amazing thing to witness other people doing the work and to answer it the questions yourself as you witness that. And so you have the person walking through the work, their mind and your mind both going to to empower you. So it's a beautiful thing to know if they can do it, that we can do it.
Well, one of the things that was powerful for me in the book is the wide range of examples that you have. You know, I kind of stepped through one example for me relative to what's going on with Katrina, because I went home today, I was watching the news. You know, every day, all you see and hear about it. But, you know, my whole life includes relationship with my wife, my kids, my employees, people I do business with, my friends. There's a whole wealth of things that are going through relative to that. And the book, for me, really provided, you know, a wide range of examples. And many of them hit home for me, and I'm sure people are coming from different vantage points. People have, you know, people are husbands, people are wives, people are mothers, people are children. And it really steps you through quite a range of different areas for folks.
You know, the 9/11 piece that even recorded, I was in Boston because I couldn't get to New York on the 12th, which I was scheduled to be there because all the bridges and everything were closed. So I made it as far as Boston and in Cambridge. But I did the work with a woman there that was out of her mind in terror over life that she understood and understood
right.
In the United States. And for all she knew, they were about to attack again. She had children. And within just a very short time as I worked with her, she was laughing. She was saying, I'm willing to. I look forward to. It was miraculous. And even though it was on tape, my publisher said, no one will believe this. It looks fixed. We've got to choose another piece. But that's the power of the work. You know, we had to get something less powerful and more believable.
Right.
But if she can do it, we can do it.
Oh, everybody in the call tonight is involved in with Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. The Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise call. And we believe in the power of intention to really manifest outcomes. For you, Katie, what's the most important project that you're working on, and what intention would you like us at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise and our listeners to hold for you?
The intention of peace, and not for the world, just for you. And in that, the world will find peace. So for everyone just to continue to do their beautiful internal work and focus on peace, if that's really what you're looking for. And out of that, a creative mind is infinite. It does not get stuck. And people in the work, you know how to unstick it so that mind can continue to be its infinite, free self. And give the world what they haven't had so far, and that is unlimited power. You know, we are more than bodies. We are mind. We're infinite mind, and the nature of that mind is goodness, and it loves to create. And as I love, Nancy, what are we creating? I just ask that people, you know, if peace is what you want, that is the ultimate success.
I think peace is what all of us want.
Yeah, and that is the ultimate success. And that's the place where we can direct our passion, and everything comes out of that. Because the more peaceful we get, the more wealth, the more everything that can pour into us to support that. And that's how it works.
Well, that ties back to what you were saying with having clarity. And the wrong beliefs can lead to confusion.
Well, the beliefs that aren't true, we feel them as stress and frustration.
Right.
That lets us know, you know, stress and frustration are a gift. They're like the alarm clock that says you're in a nightmare. Wake yourself up. And then we wake ourselves up by questioning what we believe, turning it around, and we begin again.
And just keep doing it.
On a
daily basis.
Yes, we have to keep doing something, so it may as well be directed towards peace and allowing the infinite mind to be free.
Very powerful. What I want to do at this point, well, thank you for being with us tonight. You provide
You're
a
so
lot
welcome,
of information.
David. You're so welcome. Thank you for you and the world.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I want to ask you, what single idea, you've talked about a whole bunch of things tonight, in terms of the questioning, the work, turnaround, you talked about different types of business, whether it be mine, yours, or what you describe as God's business. What single idea, there's one thing you want to leave people with our listeners tonight. What single idea would you want to leave people with?
Suffering is optional.
I'm sorry, what is optional?
That suffering is optional.
Suffering is optional.
Just four questions away. Peace is just four questions. Turn around away. Suffering is optional. And that we're all responsible for ending our own suffering.
All right. I want to take a few more minutes. I'm going to hand this back to Janet in a couple minutes. What are the first steps? There's a lot of information, a lot of stuff. What are the first steps that you'd recommend folks take in terms of learning this process and getting closer to inner peace? We mentioned, I want to mention it again, the website. It's www.thethework.com. What would you see, and I'm going to share my thoughts on it, what would you see as the first steps that people should take, the first few steps that people should take to learn more about the process and to start incorporating into, I guess, their way of life and their way of thinking?
I would suggest they go to the website and follow the simple directions.
So everything is right there. I know on the website you have the questions. It kind of steps you through everything. Sounds good.
Worksheet and then people who want to know more can buy I Need Your Love, Is That True? I think it's the most important book on relationships ever written. And then the text for the work is also at bookstores everywhere, and that is Loving What Is. And of course, you've mentioned, and I've talked a little about the School for the Work and the 2 and 3 day intensives. But basically, it's all on the website.
Sounds good. All right. Once again, I appreciate your time. I want to thank everybody for joining us. At this point, Janet, are you on the line?
Yes, David. Hi, and thanks so much, David and Katie. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and the profound process of the work with all of our readers and listeners. You know, the events on the Gulf Coast have been shocking for people all over the world, and it's timely to have the reminder that God is good and God is everything. And, you know, to have this wonderful process of investigation to help us undo the thoughts which cause us to believe anything else is true. So, Katie, you know, we love you and look forward to continuing to support your work in any way we can.
Thank you, Janet.
You're welcome. And, you know, I would also like to just say to all the listeners that I have taken Katie's School for the Work. And I can truly say, and I know Chris would also agree with me, it was completely profound. And every day, the work is with us. It's always with us. When anything comes up, it's just, is it true? Is it true? So thank you, Katie.
You're welcome, precious.
Aww. For all of you who want to know more about Katie and the work, again, we're going to say it one more time. Go to www.thework.com. When you click on resources, you'll find a worksheet so you can do the work yourself on anyone or anything which is causing you to suffer. You'll also find complete descriptions of the four questions and the turnaround, as well, again, as a calendar of events where you can decide when you will be able to go and see Katie in person. And I'll tell you, sitting with her in person is very, very powerful and a lot of fun.
You know, Janet, I didn't mention the parlor, but it's a place where I'm very intimate with people, and I answer my email and questions in a very personal and broad manner in that parlor. And I love that.
I do too, Katie. It's just like, it's just you and me when I'm there. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know everyone else feels that way. And it's just like a big old love-in. So thank you.
It really is. Yeah,
it is. So everyone else, be sure to join us on September 20th when we'll be interviewing Paul Sheely, chairman and co-founder of Learning Strategies Corporation. Paul is the author of many books and audio programs on topics such as photo reading, the ideal mindset, decisive action, consistent achievement, and personal celebration. He's a brilliant speaker. Many of you have heard him with us in our Passion series, and you'll love being with him. On October 4th, we interview the legendary Jim Rohn, whom Tony Robbins called an extraordinary human being whose philosophy can enhance the quality of life for anyone who exposes himself to it. And Harvey McKay said is one of the most articulate, powerful, thought-provoking speakers I've ever seen. And on October 28th, we interview Debbie Allen, author of the award-winning Confessions of Shameless Self-Promoters. If you've ever wondered how to turn your passions into profits, then you don't want to miss this interview. So we look forward to being with you for these incredible interviews. Now I'll open up the lines. And David, did you want to say some more before we said goodnight?
No, it's just been a pleasure. I hope everybody got a lot of good quality information, and I highly recommend following up and taking a deep look at the work and
thank
the value that it will bring to you.
And
thank
Katie,
you, David. It was such a pleasure.
Oh, Katie, thank you so much. And everyone, thank you so much for being with us this evening. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we did. And again, we look forward to being with you again next week as we go through the Passion of Real Life Legends. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Love you.
No, there's
thank
a correction.
I love you too. Thank you.
There's a correction. The website, I believe, is .org.
No, it's .com.
So, okay, thanks.
Both websites.
We'll get you there.
.org.
Hello.
Is it work or what? Hello.
The work.
Is it work or work?
Either or.
Either or?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
work.
Right. Work. W-O-R-K.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, I can get you a modifier.